You're listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for joining us. My name is John Grigas.
And I'm Josh Crawley.
And we're happy to have you join us for our show number 7.
Numero siete.
First, we want to thank our sponsor, Westfield Comics. Westfield Comics has 2 retail locations in Madison, Wisconsin. One on the Near East Side near downtown on Williamson Street, and the other one just off of Mineral Point Road on the west side of Madison. If you can't make it to Madison, you can still do business with Westfield Comics at www.westfieldcomics.com. Online subscription service and recent back issues, sold at a discount, and also lots of special extras on the website, including blogs and information worth checking out. We also want to thank some friends and supporters of the show, Josh. As we have reached our first 7 shows, we've gotten some nice feedback from folks, and we've gotten some good support. First, want to thank Top Cow Comics. You can find them at topcow.com. They regularly retweet when our shows go up, and we really appreciate having people pushed over and maybe trying us out. I also want to thank Ron Mars, and his website is www.ronmars.com. And Ron mentioned us on his website in the Artifacts No. 5 review scorecard is posting for February.
And you guys should really be sure to check those out, because it's kind of interesting just to see what all everyone else is saying about the same things you're reading and maybe you could be missing out on.
Definitely. And we got a couple of emails. I want to share some of the stuff from it, Josh. One's from Wade Kapanke.
Oh, Wade.
And Wade says, Josh made me buy a copy of the first Ron Mars trade, and I enjoyed it, although I feel that I have a lot of reading to catch up on. Also in his email, he noted that Witchblade 140 and 141 sound like a good jumping-on point. Would you say that it's a good jumping-on point?
Yes. I think it does a pretty good job of, you know, I mean, it isn't tying into all the artifact stuff. I don't want to say it's a basic Witchblade story, but as far as Witchblade stories go, it tells you what you need to know. Crazy gauntlet thing, fights crazy weird monsters.
Good time to jump on the floppies.
Yeah.
Plus, I think it ends pretty cleanly after that last Witchblade trade that came out.
I think the issues in between all focus on artifact stuff, so yeah, I mean, I think Redemption Volume 1... Well, Redemption Volume 1 leads kind of... You can follow Aphrodite 4 into artifacts from that, so as far as I remember, yeah, all the other Witchblade stuff kind of sort of tied into artifacts.
It's a good time to roll. Also, another comment from Russ Hagen. He says, I'd like to see Gleason's guns get bigger and bigger over time in a vain attempt to actually make a difference. Kind of responding to our comment before. By issue 150, he'll be carrying a bazooka around with him.
That would be humorous. I'm not going to lie.
I'd like to see him, you know, try different stuff.
Though I am kind of wondering what the police force would say about issuing him these things, or, you know, in reports when, you know, he's, I mean, they have enough to try and explain, but when you're trying to explain why you used a bazooka, or who blew up so much stuff that normally would only be blown up by a bazooka, like I said, definitely would be pretty humorous, though.
That'd be the challenge. He also noted it was good that Stefan Sajic isn't drawing the current Gleason stories running in the Witchblade, because it gives Gleason his own look from a story standpoint.
Yeah, we haven't talked about those, have we, though?
Not yet.
Okay,
that'll be
okay.
In the future, but
I didn't think so. But
so if you're not sure what we're talking about, the Witchblade floppies right now that were in the middle of artifacts, the stories are focusing on Gleason more than Sarah, because Sarah's kind of tied up with
issues 142 and 143 with artwork by Matthew Dow Smith, who is a great guy. We chat on Twitter.
So worth checking out.
You can find him on Twitter at Matthew Dow Smith. It's 2 T's in Matthew.
Easy to remember.
Yeah. Dow like Dow Chemicals, Smith like, you know, Smith. I'm guessing most people know how to spell that.
You know, it varies by country as far as the preference.
But. Oh, we're going to go with American English spelling of Smith then.
There you go. And we've got some donuts today. Got to get sugared up for the show.
Donuts.
And today's donuts are made by Oak House Bakery in Madison, Wisconsin. It's a Madison-based production plant, so they don't have an outlet store necessarily, but they service several small stores in the area, and they do have a booth at a couple of the farmers markets in town. And we've got some chocolate frosted cake donuts and some apple fritters again.
Glazed apple fritters, even. They weren't offensive, but they were nothing like the ones from Lane's Bakery last week. Those so,
Lane's still has the lead.
Yeah. Lane's is the king of the mountain right now. I'm guessing that's not going to change for quite some time. Though any local bakeries are more than welcome to try and change my mind.
It is one of our goals. We want to talk about as much Top Cow as we can while also eating as many different kinds of donuts as we can. So it's we'll see how we do on our goal. And speaking of our goal, one of our goals today is to review Artifacts number 5. So this begins the second, I guess, story arc of Artifacts. It'll begin the second trade that comes out. If you don't have Artifacts 5, or if you haven't been following the Artifacts series, this is a great time to get to your shop and pick up the Artifacts trade right now, which collects the zero issue and the first four issues, and also grab this number 5, and you'll be right on there.
And that trades the low, low price of $9.99 retail. In the United States, of course.
Hard to beat it.
May not be the same in Canada. Maybe cheaper. I hear the U.S. dollar's not too strong these days.
So we open Artifacts 5 with some appearances of not new characters to us, but new characters to the Artifacts storyline. We open up with Cyberforce and a representative from Hunter Killer.
Yeah, I like the nice establishing shot. I'm a fan of those. It, you know, it's not huge. It's not, oh, hey, look, here's a double-page spread of a lighthouse. It's not that important. It's, hey, look, by the way, those of you that know, Cyberforce, base underneath a lighthouse.
And it gets right into it, although you hear some of the banter going on between Cyberforce about basically about the pizza that was supposed to be procured for the day. Somebody dropped the ball on not bringing enough of it, but as we see these things, we also see Aphrodite Force sneaking in the back way, kind of sneaking up on them as they hang out, more or less.
Yeah, a couple quick things here. Not the first time Aphrodite has snuck into Cyberforce headquarters. Back when Ron was writing Cyberforce, he kind of teased at the end of that run in the last couple issues, there were a couple cameos by Aphrodite kind of hiding behind like a ventilation grate or something. She was spying on him. That never really went anywhere. Obviously, she's done it once. She can do it again.
So she makes herself known, and they assume rightly that somebody coming in through the back door isn't on a happy social call. And Ripclaw pretty much jumps into motion pretty quick and is taken down pretty quick, which brings Velocity into action, who gets about the same result.
Oh, actually, I remembered one of the other couple things I wanted to mention, so I guess it was going to be a few things when it's all said and done. Ellis first joined Cyberforce in the Cyberforce Hunter Killer crossover, now available in trade paperback. You were talking about the banter. Ron does some pretty great banter, especially, I think, when it involves Velocity. Ron's writing a Velocity miniseries right now.
I was
going to
say, he's writing the mini, isn't he? That's been enjoyable through the
both that and the Cyberforce Hunter Killer miniseries, which was written by Mark Waid, have artwork by Kenneth Rocafort. You know, if you want a little more background on kind of some of the setups here and random mentions that you might not have figured out, you can check those books out.
One of the things I found interesting, and I have to once again thank Brian Roundtree for his write-ups in the back, in this House of Cards, in the back of the issue, he does a profile of each of the players in Cyberforce and also Ellis Baker, the Hunter Killer, representative to Cyberforce, I guess you can call him. And the write-up of Ripclaw talks about how he struggles with having been a Native American shaman, and now he's a part of Cyberforce, and To use the exact words, Ripclaw has struggled with his alienation from his Native American roots as a shaman and the connection it gives him to the natural world. And of all the characters that are being introduced here, his is, I would think, the most set up to wield an artifact or have a connection to an artifact just because of his roots as, you know, as a shaman. You can bring in kind of a different form of mysticism into the whole mix. So I wonder if this Cyberforce role is just going to be a in and out kind of appearance, or if he might have a bigger role down the line.
Yeah, where Cyberforce will kind of come in and they'll leave, but he'll stay.
I just think he might have the spiritual equipment to be able to get into the mix.
That had not occurred to me. Food for thought.
But in any case, Aphrodite 4 and Cyberforce are tearing it up in their headquarters. And Aphrodite basically gets her head blasted off. Cassandra
ballistic.
Lane, ballistic, pretty much just blows through it. And as we know, Aphrodite 4 is a cyborg, so she's only slowed down and not stopped. But that another great line in here is, guess you couldn't miss, and how did you realize she was a cyborg? And her first is, what makes you think I cared?
Yeah, it's... I kind of miss Ron Mars on Cyberforce.
Well, I think an ongoing would be...
Not going to lie.
...called for. So... Aphrodite, once everything settles down, she turns around and says, look, I'm here as a warning, and I'm trying to call you. There's somebody who's trying to destroy the universe, and it's pretty easy for us to do the math. She's on what we have identified as the bad side. She's convincing them to come over and fight on their side. And I guess it kind of plays to it. There is no, you know, there's neither good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. And it depends on your perspective whether you're on the good side or not. And she's trying to recruit Cyberforce to take down Witchblade and Darkness and Angelus.
Yeah, kind of a lie by omission that, yeah, someone's trying to destroy stuff, but by the way, it's probably us.
Oh, yeah, it's the guy I work for, but beyond that, you need to help us take the other guys down. Which, at that point, the scene shifts over back to where we left off in Artifacts 4. And if you haven't figured it out already, we do spoil these storylines. But we're trying to spoil it in a way that still makes you want to go back and read it, or even more so, we're trying to spoil it in a way that makes you want to reread it.
Yeah.
And a couple of times, because there's a lot of rich layers of information in these books. But we're taken back to where the curator was blown up, basically.
Oh, he blew up good.
Yeah, that was what I liked best about this. As Jackie was away from the explosion, and Danny and Sarah were kind of in the middle of it, touching or being right around the curator when he exploded, and it pretty much destroyed the building, and the darkness creatures around them, their banner's also a lot of fun, but one of them says, she blew it up real good, which I love because I remember watching that sketch on Second City TV growing up, and there was a sketch... it was like a farm film review or something. I don't know the name of it, but they were just a couple of Canadian yokels, and they would rate movies and other things on how well it blew up. And I remember one episode they were so mad at the John Travolta. John Travolta had a movie at the time that was called, I think it was Blowout or something like that, and they just panned it because, hey, nobody blowed up in the thing, you know. But
was it about a tire?
Yeah, no, like explosions. But they bring celebrities on.
Well, but I was thinking that movie, though. Blowout.
Blowout.
I suppose, maybe it's a sports movie, too.
Huh? It was like a psycho thriller, like a psychological thriller as opposed to a action film. And I'm going on 30-year-old memories here or 20-year-old memories, so it's hard for me to place it. But I do know that it was on SCTV, so I appreciate the nod to it. I know it's kind of going into pop culture too, but I really appreciated Ron writing that in there. That was worth a chuckle, and those coming to really like those darkness creatures that are always around.
And this is something I actually just noticed looking at this page again, because we're talking about, oh, the curator shop blew up, Sarah and Danny were inside with the curator. Jackie, you know, first he yells for Sarah, and then he's like, Sarah, Danny, answer me. I just realized, I'm like, you know, him and Danny don't get along too well. But he's human enough that he's still looking for Danny relatively immediately.
That's a really interesting point, because I wouldn't come naturally to the darkness to go looking for the human host.
And it's not like he's like, oh, hey, curator, dusty old guy. It's Sarah Danny. And I mean, yeah, they're the main characters, but at the same time, it's, to me, it shows that, you know, he still definitely has that humanity and, well.
A glimpse of it, at least, because, you know, he's looking for some sign of life, so you could also argue maybe that he's saying it because she's one of the others living that are around, so if at least he's got a can where somebody is. But
he doesn't mention the curator, though.
No, well, that's a good point. Very interesting. But in any case, Sarah, the Witchblade, was able to protect everyone, and as Jackie clears the rubble and interacts with Sarah, they're
in like a Witchblade cocoon.
Yeah, which is a lot of, and I guess we can talk a little bit about the art here and the art style. Wills Portacio started off on this arc, and he has a lot of fans for sure. And I'm still, jury's out for me as far as Wills Portacio. So far, I think I prefer the Michael Brossard art a little more, but I do have to say that Portacio's drawing and definitely his panel layout bring a lot more motion into the story. So I appreciate the kinetic energy that he's able to bring to it, and a lot of line work.
Kind of a switch from the noir of Broussard to a little more action-oriented. And I was a fan of Portacio way back, like X-Factor, Uncanny X-Men days, early 90s. Some of his more recent stuff hasn't particularly appealed to me. Interestingly enough, though, keeping, you know, the same inkers on artifacts, generally, Joe Weems and Marco Galli also inked this issue. It helps maintain a cohesive look, even, you know, to the line work, even without being the same penciler. I mean, it's a different penciler, but it's,
yeah, it's not so drastically different. Yeah. I agree with that for sure.
And the coloring by Sonny Go still, and Arif Prianto of IFS. You know, it helps maintain that cohesion from arc to arc, even though, like I said, pencilers are changing. That I appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too. And there are some panels, and this is kind of where I'm thinking, the backgrounds and details in the book now, I think, you know, with the exception of some of the really important church scenes and drawings that have come out. But I'm just looking at some of these. There's a lot of line work in the backgrounds. There's a lot of line work in the details, but not always a line work in a background character, which is kind of interesting. Whereas I think Michael Brossard seemed to put a little, maybe more of the effort into the character and not as much thought into some of the backgrounds on some of the panels, because there's some of them, as I'm looking on where Jackie and Sarah are interacting, there's a page, and they're basically walking through the rubble, and the principal character is very carefully drawn with a lot of line work, but the people in the background may be more shapes than anything else. And yet the background itself has lines that must have, I can't imagine it taken less than a few days to put each of these together, because there's so much work in these panels.
You know, that's a tough one. I think part of it might just be realizing what will not reproduce when the artwork's shrunk down. Kind of like in Spider-Man, where sometimes, I want to say especially Mark Bagley, just because he has such a long stretch drawing the character, if Spider-Man's a certain size in the panel, he'd just leave the webbing off the costume.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to get too small and...
Yeah, so you're telling me they're not making this for the Absolute? Because I want to buy the Absolute artifacts.
I would not complain if there was a giant deluxe edition artifacts to go on the shelf next to my Firstborn Broken Trinity deluxe slipcase oversized hardcover.
Right, hint, hint. So we'll just keep repeating that for a few more episodes.
I mean, I'd like Ron Marz omnibus editions of his Witchblade stuff, too. So if anyone's listening at Top Cow right now.
Moving on in the story, we are brought to the other side, basically. So the protagonist, or the antagonist, the leader of the of the bad guys, what I'm going to call them, is there, and along with the Emberstone wielder, Gloriana, and they're watching Hope play with blocks as Jackie and Sarah are out searching for Hope, but she's just hanging out, and they're interacting, and Gloriana's getting pretty annoyed that they're just sitting here watching this kid when they're just going to sacrifice her anyway. Let's just get it done with this so I can go out and, you know, probably take back the Glacier Stone.
Yeah, she wants to go put the Trinity back together, get the band back together. Have we, I can't remember, did we discuss possible identities of this cloaked figure?
We did a little bit.
Okay.
The only thing I can't remember is if we did on the show, because I know we've talked about it.
Oh, yeah.
But what's your theory?
You know, I can't take credit for my theory. I believe it was
one
of the Comic Geek Speak guys, though, said that it might be Kenneth Iron's son, whose name I honestly don't remember.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember now. It was Adam Murdo on Comic Geek Speak who thought it was Kenneth Irons himself.
Oh,
and then when you and I had talked, I wondered about his son because I know that he had survived, but I don't remember what happened to him after the last Witchblade trade that he was in.
Yeah.
Which wasn't that long ago, actually.
That was, I want to say it's Volume 5, the first Sayage trade.
So.
Storyline 116 through 118.
But it makes natural sense that there'd be a connection, and some Irons would be, especially with Ian Nottingham on this side.
Yeah. Well, and at this point, Ron hasn't used a character or artifact and then just kind of pushed it to the wayside. I mean, it may not come back for a while, but it comes back. Aphrodite came back. The Blood Sword came back. I think we also mentioned the possibility that it could be Jake. Maybe.
Yeah, that did come up.
After the goofy, demon-y death thing around issue 102?
Maybe it
was issue 100.
I think it was a little earlier, but he... it was probably around there, and then he was dead, but he seemed too mystical to be that far gone. I don't know, especially for as big a role as he had in the first 100 issues of Witchblade, or at least the first, 84 issues of Witchblade. Yeah.
Of course, when Ron kills someone, usually he brings him back, like, the next issue, not 20 issues
later. Put him in that pocket. I don't know. So then we flash back, and they're searching for the monk. Basically, they're searching for the 13th artifact. They had a lead to the monastery or whatever type of holy place that we saw the monks get slaughtered.
By the 13th artifact.
And they're finding those. And they're not sure where he went, but then they flash down to a village, and this kind of talks more when you say you're thinking Tibet. I do see Tibetan prayer flags in the village that are draped across the streets, but he's in the masses, and he is walking through in some village in a robe. And so now I know one of the theories that you had is that he somehow was involved in the curator's death. If he was, it was probably pretty remote because his physical self is still walking relatively close to the monastery. But
though it was the same kind of color G energy projection, though.
That's absolutely right. So it's connected somehow to the 13th artifact. Yeah. But
guessing he probably isn't teleporting if he's this close, assumedly, to the temple where the monks were.
Yep. So story-wise, Cyberforce was convinced to at least give Aphrodite 4 a shot at going to see what's going on here. So they're traveling on the way to the church where our good side is collected, and you've got Sarah and Jackie have returned with Danny, and also there is the Magdalena, and Tom Judge, the Rapture, is there, and they're interacting about taking action. The scene opens. I want to give a little more Comic Geek Speak love. It's the panel that opens the church conversation shows a stained glass window depiction of, basically it's the story of Abraham about to sacrifice his son, but then stopped by an angel of the Lord that he didn't have to. I noticed that myself when I first read it, but, having been brought up in, the Archdiocese of South Chicago, you get a lot of that imagery drummed into you. But I have to say, podcast-wise, the first I heard of it was confirmed by Adam Murdo on Comic Geek Speak after being brought up by Mike Gallagher on Comic Geek Speak. So props to those guys for keeping the conversation moving forward. But in any case, Sarah's running out of patience. She's ready to walk out. She's ready to pull Jackie with her. And who is at the door as she walks out but Aphrodite 4, which kind of pulls Sarah right into action.
And she's got her creepy, when she's healing from when, Aphrodite, that is. Her face looks creepy because she's kind of partially healed from when Ballistic shot her through the back of the head.
Yeah, like half of her face is cyber-stitched or something that's really...
Yeah, though the question is, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily her body as it might be the Coin of Solomon doing that.
Ooh.
She had to be repaired last time.
That's true.
She took a bunch of stuff.
Does she regenerate at all? I mean...
Well, that might be... I'd have to study Solomon more. And what the coin that he might have had or someone named after him does. But she started... Actually, if you go back to that page where she got shot...
Yeah.
You can notice in the word balloons, actually, the shape changes of the word balloons kind of like she's healing as she's talking.
Yeah, they square off.
Yeah.
They get rectangular and then rounded again as she settles down.
So not sure if that's a healing program or the coin doing that, but I actually think I'm going to go with the coin because there's no kind of narration from, say, her operating system going into a, like, a self-repairing program, boot up or something. Fancy computer jargon. There's none of it there.
Well, that's interesting. Well, we'll find out as we go through, I guess. So Sarah and Aphrodite fight pretty fiercely, and the team on the Cyberforce ship saw that things went south pretty fast, so they ended up joining the fight. Ripclaw basically says, I've got darkness. Give me Jackie. I've dealt with him before, so I'm out of here.
Yes, he has.
And he's the first one jumping out. So he has in the Darkness series?
Yes, in Darkness issues 34 through 38, according to comicbookdb.com, which is collected in Darkness Trade Paperback Volume 3.5, Flesh and Blood. I haven't actually read it myself, but a quick synopsis that I think I actually read on Comic Vine. Ripclaw was going to help kind of train Jackie in kind of controlling some of the aspects of the darkness, kind of through, you know, more spiritual means. I actually want to read that trade. That's definitely on my list here soon.
And then we cut to a two-page splash to end the issue with the To Be Continued, which is, you know, another awesome... This one is a real kinetic piece. You have Sarah having just slashed the face of Aphrodite 4 in the foreground. You've got Ripclaw and Jackie about to throw hands. You've got Velocity coming onto the scene. And you have the Magdalena, who is bearing down on... Which character is that?
You know, it took me a second. I'm assuming that's Ellis. Powered up Ellis after... I don't know whose powers he might have grabbed.
Oh, well, I know that earlier in the trade, he was about to assume some of Velocity's power, but I don't know if that would serve... If he still holds that after taking some of her...
His hands look kind of Ripclaw-ish.
Oh, yeah, they sure do.
And actually, I think I wanted to go back here a couple pages. Oh, the page before this awesome closing splash page, which is really cool, but I wanted to point out this really funny line. Jackie says, wait, and then Patience, the Magdalena, not to be confused with the Patience that Witchblade was losing earlier, she says, you see it too? There's a hole in the sky.
Yeah.
It just kind of, you know, made me chuckle, but it's the Cyberforce ship is cloaked on the outside, but as, you know, like a... attack bay opens, you can see the inside of the ship.
Yeah,
kind of like Wonder Woman's invisible jet.
Right. But if you open that.
Yeah, it just made me chuckle. There's a hole in the sky. That's not something you see every day.
So another winner that moved the issue back, and I'm excited to get number 6 soon. And also they're doing the two-page origins. The origin of the Ember Stone is featured, and this art is by John Tyler Christopher, who's been doing some really nice covers for the Artifact series.
It's pretty. If you guys haven't seen his stuff, it's kind of reminiscent of some of the computer coloring Adam Hughes does. A little bit of the Daniel Acuna in there. Maybe something a little bit between the two.
So pick it up and join us. We've got issue 6 coming out soon. We're excited to see it. Next episode, we're going to take a look at the Top Cow first look, so I hope that you were able to dig out one of the trades. that they've got out. They're only $4.99 at your retailer. And hit the internet to scrub around and find one if you can't get one locally. We will look through all six of those issues that are in there, including Echoes, which is one of the buzz books that have been pushed out. There's also some, if you go to topcow.com, they can show you a link where you can read Echoes number one for free. So if you can't pick that up, you can also read that first issue and comment along. If you've got comments about any of the first look titles, please send them by. Our email address is dtcpodcast@gmail.com. We'd also like to thank the Comic Book Noise Network and Derek Coward for taking us on. We're happy to be part of the Comic Book Noise family. And you can see our blog page at www.comicbooknoise.com/topcow.
A little bit of news came out recently, depending on when you're actually listening to this. They've already announced who is doing the third story arc of Artifacts.
Breaking news.
Jeremy Hahn.
Ooh.
Recently signed exclusive. Before he's going to go do some darkness work with Phil Hester, he's going to be doing Artifacts 9 through 12. And I don't think it's... I don't know if anyone else has guessed this yet, because they've been saying the 13th issue will be a fourth artist. Not going to lie, my guess has been from day one that it's going to be Mark Silvestri.
Oh, let it be Mark Silvestri.
And I think that's only fitting.
I know it's a major Top Cow crossover event.
Yeah.
You got to have Mark's stamp on it more than just an origin page in the back of one of these.
Definitely.
So, we're excited about that and hoping that that's more news to be announced.
This is completely unrelated in every way to this podcast, but I'd just like to say that finally, The Rock has come back to the WWE, and I am so excited. So
if you're excited too, follow Josh on Twitter and interact. It's at Josh Crawley, CRAWLEY on Twitter. And you can also email us at dtcpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd be interested in hearing your Rock comments along with some of the other comments about the Top Cow books. Thank you for listening.
Good journey.